The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. Don't adjust your sets. We are on a Saturday morning. It is Saturday, April the 5th, 2025, and welcome to the Nerdcast News Report. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. A little bit of a delayed report as work and life kind of got in the way this week, but we're going to kind of settle in on this Saturday time slot for a little while at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. We'll continue to keep our Monday podcast as well, and of course you can always catch the Hard Rock Empire every Sunday night at 7. That'll kind of be where we'll settle in, at least probably through most of the spring, and then we might switch it back up when we get a little bit farther toward the summer. But it is our chance to maybe we're the last ones to kind of opine on this, but you know, we'll save the best for last. Our thoughts on the Switch 2, which was announced earlier this week, and going to be some unknowns, obviously, with the pre-sale date and the price kind of up in the air at the moment. But everything else we do know, and we'll tell you everything we know and what we think as we go through this edition of the Nerdcast News Report. Joining me in studio on this Saturday morning is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. And yeah, we may be a little late to the party, but honestly, given the amount of backlash and discourse that have ensued after that Switch 2 Direct, I think in a way it was probably almost better to sit back and collect more information and kind of let the dust settle before really digging in and talking about how we feel about this system and kind of the variables that are still at play.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, going on, like if we would have went on Wednesday afternoon, I think we wouldn't have even had the full scope and picture of everything that people were saying and kind of the feelings of the community. And again, some of the things we'll talk about as far as pricing goes is are now, you know, kind of up in the air as we kind of see where that settles in, which is kind of funny because as we get to the not so good, one of the things people complain about were the high price of games. And well, you know, those $80 and $90 games might be a bargain now, depending on how everything shakes out. But you know, we'll get to the negative stuff a little bit later on because we do kind of want to start with just the general news first before we kind of get to the things we really like about this. Of course, the Nintendo Direct was on April 2nd. We've been talking about it for months. And as expected, Nintendo did unveil the Switch 2. It is a pretty impressive looking system, to be completely honest with you. Some of the features that they have added in, it is not just a clone of the Switch 1. They have it's obviously bigger. There are new, there's a new C button. We'll talk about that as a feature of the chat. Well, obviously there's mouse, controls with your Joy-Cons, and there's a lot of really wild stuff. I guess before, again, we get into that, like the, what we really like from it, your first impressions generally, as you watch the 60-minute Direct on April 2nd.
Yeah, this is probably the first time watching Nintendo unveil something in a while where you weren't thinking, I don't know if this system's going to be powerful enough to deliver everything they want to deliver. I think all the games that they showed looked really impressive. When they got into kind of the third party and partner spotlight, you saw a lot of third party developers clearly are excited to develop on this system. You're seeing games that for the regular Switch just seemed like an impossibility. You weren't going to have a lot of these major titles have a Switch port, and now you're seeing them come to Switch 2, which I think is a really huge deal too. I think with that, that's kind of where you then start pivoting into the pricing element, which is another story. But, you know, I think we've reached a point where you're getting diminishing returns with graphical capabilities the higher up you go. So even if the Switch 2 looks like a PS4 game or has the power of a PS4, that's still pretty visually impressive, all things considered.
Yeah, I don't think the goal was ever to make this more powerful than the PS5 Pro. I don't think that was the plan. Or kind of conversely, your most powerful PC gaming system that you can build. Because obviously you can build something that's totally insane if you want to get to that point. And, you know, that is not really what they were going for here. And, you know, there was an article on Game Rant talking about how the Nintendo Switch 2 has reportedly 10 times the graphic performance of the original Switch based on the NVIDIA chip that's inside of this Switch 2. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge impact as far as the quality of play, but at the same time, it's not so over the top that it's going to, you know, have heating issues, or because again, we're talking about this small unit. There's only so far you can go. I mean, obviously technology is changing all the time, but you know, there becomes a point where you start running into cooling issues and you start running into other performance issues on something so small.
Well, I think with Nintendo, they dropped out of the arms race after the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
Even when they announced the GameCube and it came out, it wasn't to the level of the PS2 or Xbox. It was at that point in time, it seemed like, hey, we're going to try to, you know, blaze our own trail in a different direction. And I think it served them well ultimately, because like I've mentioned numerous times before, what Nintendo has that the other companies don't is this unparalleled roster of first party intellectual properties that they don't let other people use. I mean, not since the Philips CDI have you seen a Nintendo character on some other company's hardware. And that was obviously kind of a disaster, but they have that at their disposal, so they can kind of slow play the graphical evolution and as a result keep costs a little more reasonable. I think we're just now starting to see where that's going to become an issue, because you're having some of these game titles like the Cyberpunk game. I think it's going to be upwards to 100 gigabytes as far as the game goes. You're going to start running into that, but they've done a better job than the other companies in prioritizing the gameplay and the enjoyability, maybe at the expense of the graphics and development costs.
And again, you mentioned kind of the third party games coming to the site. A lot of the big games that have either already released for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X are now going to be coming, but also games that have been announced and haven't yet been released are now going to be coming. But again, I think, like you said, as we get into kind of the things we liked about what we heard, I think those first party titles were a big part of the announcement. I think we
knew they always will be.
Yeah, for sure. Couple huge Mario type games. You've got the new Mario Kart game, which just looks insane.
It's huge.
It does. And you watch the video of it, and we used it for our thumbnail on our webpage today. Just one of the screenshot, the dozens and dozens of screenshots that they had posted in their press channel about that. I mean, they've taken that game, which again, it was due for an update. You know, I bought my Switch maybe about a year ago, and I bought Mario Kart 8 that had all the expansion packs and stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's still a lot of fun. I would continue to play it, but you can clearly tell it's a game that is older now. It's a game that needed a replacement, and they just absolutely created this just almost open world game based on Mario Kart that just looks completely insane.
Yeah, the addition of kind of that open world element where you not only have the races, but you drive your cart to the races, and you can have kind of the free driving mode where you and your friends can just drive all over the place. Like, there's just so many weird added features to what's still just basically a kart game. It's really kind of phenomenal. And just watching the race gameplay alone, it seems like a huge leap forward. The tracks all look amazing so far. I also think, and this kind of jumps a little bit into the bad when people start talking about the price for Mario Kart, potentially being $80 when the dust settles. I think you got to consider that Mario Kart 8 lasted over 10 years, basically. It's a game that had legs and still did. And a couple of years ago, they even added paid DLC essentially to it.
Yeah.
So I get the feeling they don't expect Mario Kart World to just be hot for a couple of years and fade away. I think they expect it to keep selling and doing well throughout the life of the console. And maybe by charging a little more now, you reduce the need for paid DLC, if not at all, at least in the next few years.
Well, I think what they figured out with Mario Kart 8 is that was a game that could basically last longer than the life of the Switch. And I think if you're thinking with that mindset, when you price this, when you figured out, when even if you do have paid DLC in maybe 5 years or whatever, you know, there's going to be value proposition there, because the game itself is so big, it's going to take you a long time to get through it. And if you then come back and add more worlds and more features in 5-6 years, I mean, again, it's a game you're buying that you might be playing for 10-15 years.
Yeah,
that's kind of synonymous the way video games used to be, that you could pick up a game from you know, the NES, the Super NES, and play it for years and years. It wasn't something that you played through. Oh, well, this game got me 25 hours or 30 hours, yeah, and then you were done with it.
Like,
and
well,
then,
I've got platinum on this. Time to move on. Like,
yeah, you know. I think that's the issue is, and again, we're not debating that some of these games are going to have a sticker shock. We don't want to get too deep into it because obviously that does get into the negative. But if you're comparing it to a game that comes out that has 50, 60 hours of gameplay, then I think it's a little bit apples and oranges, especially with something like this and the Mario Party game that was announced. I mean, there are still people I talk about all the time that stream the original Mario Party games on Twitch, yeah, like the oldest games, and they're still having fun playing them. So it's like, some of these games are games that are meant to be played forever, basically.
And I think that's a trend across gaming where, you know, we've talked about reports in the past where the majority of gamers are playing games that are, you know, 7 years old. Yeah. Like, I think that's the dream for game developers, is how do we create games that have legs like that? And I think a lot of them aren't necessarily hitting the mark right now, but obviously Nintendo did with the previous Mario Kart. And why wouldn't you just try to up that and push it forward? To me, it's the first thing that sticks out as far as the good news. But I think there's a whole lot of other things to be excited about with the system too.
Yeah, jump into some of that other stuff, because obviously you're the heavier gamer than I am, and like I said, I enjoyed a lot of stuff from it too. But I kind of want to get your thoughts on some of the other things you really liked.
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing you look at is the hardware itself and the features of the system. I think Nintendo's always prioritized gameplay over graphical quality, but the Switch 2, just based on the Direct and what we've seen so far, I think it's kind of found that perfect sweet spot between the two. You look at the mouse functionality, the Joy-Cons giving you new ways to interact with games. They announced DragX Drive, which is basically wheelchair basketball that uses the mouse functionality of the Joy-Cons, which I don't know how popular that's going to be, but it's definitely creative and an inventive way to get people using the Joy-Cons as mice. You got Civilization 7, which is now adding mouse functionality, which for a game like that, it kind of requires the mouse. Like, it's very much a PC kind of game. The new Metroid Prime 4 is going to have mouse capabilities too, which again kind of lends back to the PC first person shooter element to Metroid Prime. What they have going on with some of the mini games and Mario Party Jamboree will make use of that as well. I think also the microphone built into the machine and yeah, the separate webcam, which from what I heard is they're selling the webcam, which at the moment is going to be $50. But I had heard somewhere that you could actually use third party webcams that have USB-C capability to plug in as well. I don't have confirmation on that, but even if not, if by chance the webcam stays at $50, that seems kind of reasonable for a game peripheral.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so many of Nintendo's first party games fall into that multiplayer party game type atmosphere, whether it is Mario Party, Mario Kart, Mario Tennis, so many games like that. And I think where they've lacked for years is that social element, which I think a lot of it had to do with being a kid friendly system and not wanting, you know, to open yourself up to all sorts of creepy nonsense. But yeah, you know, when you see on the Direct, it basically looks like they're having like a Discord call in the middle of their Mario Kart session. Like, to me, that's kind of the evolution they needed for what their games do. The screen sharing, I'll be interested to see how that works, because it does appear to be a bit laggy, which I guess you kind of expect given what you're trying to pull off there.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's another really cool thing. And you can even stream other games you're playing while your friends are playing different games, and you can pull up their screen and make it larger, and just a lot of really cool stuff that we've seen kind of the early reports on. But I think that you could even make use of that even in wider arrays that we haven't seen. The other side, you know, we've talked about hardware and features, but the games shown look pretty.
Yeah.
For the first time in a while, when you look at a Nintendo game, you're like, hey, this looks good. Yeah, I mentioned it may only be as powerful as a PS4, but those games still look pretty good in 2025. So if that's what the Switch 2 is outputting, I can live with that. It clearly has third party developers excited, as they had numerous games that you never thought would be on a Nintendo system at this stage of the game. Games like Cyberpunk 2077, a new IP from Software, the Duskbloods, which looks really cool. You have Hogwarts Legacy, Street Fighter 6, Borderlands 4, EA Sports and 2K jumping back onto the Switch. EA Sports bringing FC and Madden, and 2K bringing NBA and WWE. You have Elden Ring, you have Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade, Star Wars Outlaws, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. Really cool to see those titles making their way to the Switch. Whether or not that's still going to be your preferred system to play them, that's up in the air, but I think it says a lot that they find it worthy to put them on the Nintendo system.
Yeah, clearly the output of those games is going to be good enough that they're not worried about a poor experience, because obviously the game developer doesn't want to put it on a system and then the game's kind of laggy, or it doesn't really output well, and then people are like, well, this game sucks. It's, well, it wasn't the game. Like, you're trying to play it on a toaster. Like, you know, clearly there's a situation here where they feel like the technology behind the Switch 2 is enough that, like, hey, you can play Civilization, you can play Elden Ring, and still get that same positive game experience. Is it going to be one for one for the PlayStation 5? Of course not. PlayStation 5 is just way more powerful. But, you know, that it doesn't have to be. It can still be. You can still get to where you need to get to with what the, you know, a PlayStation 4 equivalent type technology is going to be.
Exactly. And looking back to the original Switch, there were games that weren't even necessarily all that impressive graphically that had performance issues, whether you're talking Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, Dragon Quest Monsters, The Dark Prince. Like, that one just looked like the Dragon Ball anime. Like, it was very Akira Toriyama character design, cel shaded looking graphics. Like, you didn't think there'd be any reason for it to struggle, and it did. So to see this step up, and for third party developers to say, hey, it's worth our time to actually develop on this, that's great for them, because when you look at the penetration the original Switch had, like, you want your games on their system. You just want the system to be able to represent it in a reasonable way. You know, one other thing to mention is that we are getting some free and some paid upgrades to Switch titles on the Switch 2. Mm-hmm. Kind of excited about some of the free ones that are getting updates. You have like Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario 3D World, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and Echoes of Wisdom. The big one for me, though, is Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, because it was laughably poor performance laden on the original Switch. So to see what they're able to do with it on the Switch 2 for free, no less, is really cool. And obviously some of your major titles that they're actually adding content as well as performance updates are getting paid upgrades, like your the two mainline Zelda titles, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, Mario Party Jamboree, and then the yet to be released Metroid Prime Beyond and Pokemon Legends ZA. So it'll be cool to kind of see a comparison when we get the opportunity to see what the Switch 2 does with these that the Switch maybe is lacking in.
Yeah, and that's something we'll be able to do, obviously, because as we talked about a couple weeks ago, they are continuing to release things for the original Switch. So if you have a Switch, or you were thinking about getting a Switch, it's still not a bad time to do that, because there's still going to be content there, and it's maybe a good way to kind of introduce yourself to the world of the Switch. Kind of jumping back before we kind of jump into the negative stuff, the whole webcam Discord thing was really impressive. To me, that's just such a logical step to create something that allows you to make streaming easier, because that's what everybody's doing with video games in 2025. You're streaming it on Twitch, you're streaming it on YouTube. You have to make that interface as easy as possible, and this seems like a great way to do that. Another thing that I'm interested in, that I don't know if the news is, if anybody's kind of speculated on this yet or not, but you talked about the mouse functionality of the Joy-Cons. It makes me wonder, like, will you be able to just Bluetooth in a mouse if you have a really cool gaming mouse and basically connect a mouse directly to your Switch too?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would think almost it would have to be a game by game thing, because I imagine there are probably still some games that while you're using the mouse, there are also things kind of inherent to the Joy-Con that you still want that functionality too. But yeah, for something like Civilization, that almost seems like, you would just use a PC mouse and go with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got, you know, I would just think you could pretty, I don't want to say easily because I'm not a game developer, but I would think you could set it up where you could remap the features of the Joy-Con onto a mouse for games that maybe aren't a direct crossover, and kind of make that work. I mean, again, just another possibility now that you're creating that to make the Switch 2 also very PC game friendly when you want to kind of port those things in. Again, a lot of positives to talk about. But like Mike said, the fact that we were able to wait a couple of days before we opined on this gave us a chance to kind of gather in all the not so positive stuff about the Switch. And obviously, that, you know, some of it is stuff that is, may still be up in the air when we start talking about cost, because some of these things might end up being more expensive than they'd originally thought. But cost is at least a part of it. Assuming that the costs are as advertised, game costs for $80, obviously $100 in some cases, certainly got everybody's attention. I think there's a lot of debate as to whether that's probably more accurate as far as considering inflation and things like that. But that was certainly the first visceral reaction of people when they were watching live. And then even like something as simple as the tutorial game that's going to be released is also being charged.
Don't know the price on that yet, but they did mention there will be one.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I saw somewhere it's going to be about $6.12, I guess, 990 yen is what they're advertising that. And again,
that's where you're like, okay, that's pretty cheap, but it's almost so cheap, why aren't you just giving it to me?
Yeah, I'm paying maybe at least $450.
Yeah.
You know, probably most people would, if the prices hold, will go for the $500 bundle just to get a game, especially if games are going to be $80 to $100. Why would you not get one maybe discounted right out of the gate? Why would you not just throw in a $6 tutorial? And that just seems like one of those things that, you know, they might before launch actually come back and say, you know what, we were wrong about that. We're just going to give that to you for free. Or if we'll give that to you for free if you buy a game or something like that to make it kind of worth it.
Well, I feel like I saw a story. I can't remember if it was the Wii or which system it was. If it was the Wii, it would have been Wii Sports. But they basically had to like convince like Reggie over here with Nintendo of America had to convince Japan to basically give that game for free with the system as opposed to charging extra for it. It might have been Wii Sports. It may have been something on the Wii U. I can't remember for sure now, but when you think of how popular Wii Sports was on the Wii, I mean, that was one of the most popular games, and you just got it with the system.
Yeah. Like,
to me, there's no better way to just instantly add value to your product than do that. But yeah, the not so good kind of comes in two major categories. I think the pricing is a huge one for people. And then I think the looming issue with physical cartridges and the whole game key card thing is definitely something to talk about. Nintendo held two Treehouse events this week after the Direct, kind of doing some hands-on with the game titles. Kind of fun to watch, just seeing people interact with the games and getting a better glimpse into what the gameplay is going to be. But they were marred by users spamming drop the price in the live chat just endlessly. Like, it was ugly. It's kind of funny now that the price is up in the air. So after all of this, like, crying about the price of the Switch 2, it might actually end up increasing in price.
Yes.
Not that I want to pay more, but there is something funny about people throwing the tantrums regarding the price. And now, well, if you weren't happy with this price, wait till you see the new one.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah, at the moment, it seems like Mario Kart World is going to be $80. The new Donkey Kong game is going to be $70. I think if you're other game developers and if you're Sony and Microsoft, you're stoked about this because someone else gets to be the bad guy, to be the one that kind of makes that next push forward in game pricing, because game prices have been fairly consistent for years now. I understand when you're talking cartridge versus disc, it's different, but every now and then you'll see an old ad pop up for Super Nintendo games where some of those were $90.
Yeah.
Like they went nuts on the pricing for Super Nintendo. And you know, when the 32-bit era really hit, things kind of stabilized to like $40 to $50, and it kind of remained that way then to 60. And I mean, but that was 30 years ago. Like, we're now finally at a point where someone's like, you know, we need to make the standard be higher than what it is. Like, Tears of the Kingdom for Switch was set at 70, and that was kind of a big deal. You know, they're talking about potentially GTA 6 being a $100 game. We don't know that for sure, but I think it's inevitable that these prices do have to increase. I think you better be giving me the value that I want. And I kind of tend to think Nintendo stands a better chance of doing that because, again, their main focus has always been on the gameplay and not the realism of the graphics. I think you're going to find their development costs go toward fun and not, you know, design.
Yeah, I'm inclined to to some degree, and I know it's going to sound like we're just Nintendo fanboys to give Nintendo a bit of the benefit of the doubt, because it does feel like the games haven't really accounted for inflation. And I don't think, you know, I'm a little surprised Nintendo is the first one to do it, and it wasn't one of the other game systems. But the counter side to that is, like you said, the digital game cartridge thing. And I think that's where I run into some issues with it, because one of the things we've talked about extensively on this podcast is the ability to actually own something when you buy it, to own the game, to own anime, the physical media portion of the thing that I can put in my game system 20 years from now and still play, and it's mine. These digital game cartridges are basically digital games. There are slight semantic differences that, you know, well, you can trade them to another person and, you know, you can do all this other stuff. But in the end, you put the game in there and then you still have to download the game. So it's still a digital game, which means somewhere down the line, they could decide to not allow you to have that digital game. And when you're talking those kind of prices for something that I may be renting and not buying, that's where I start running into issue. Now, Nintendo hasn't necessarily been a company that has done that. But when you see, again, it's gaming trends, you know, you see other, you know, Steam or whoever it is, you see that, those kind of things happening elsewhere. You just can't help but think, well, what if this happens to the $100 Nintendo Switch 2 game that I bought that 5 years down the road, they decide they want to sell a new one. So it's like, well, we're discontinuing access to that game. Sorry, your $100 is down the toilet. Then that pricing model doesn't really look as good, I think, a few years in the future.
No, I would totally agree with that. I think at the end of the day, and Nintendo certainly is a little behind the other companies in doing this, but you're ultimately just leasing these titles. There's in many cases, there is no purchasing anymore, even though they use that verbiage, which I think is another problem. Like, if you tell me I'm buying it, I bought it. It's mine now. There shouldn't have to be interaction between you and I once I buy something from you.
Yeah.
If you buy some used game off Facebook Marketplace, you don't have to keep going back to the person you bought it from and have further interaction. It's over. And I think we're way too far gone for the gaming public to force these companies to change. And I hate the idea of governments stepping in and adding restrictions, but I just think, and it's not even just gaming. It happens, again, in all facets of entertainment and in life now. I think they've created so many things with smart features to try to put you on the hook for never truly owning things and always having to pay back into to get access to. I just think that's we're so far down that slope now. I don't know how we fix it, but I think we have to start looking into ways to curb that a bit and try to move back toward one purchase, one owner.
Well, I think if it's going to change, if government is going to get involved, in all likelihood, we're talking about the Japanese government, because they are typically the government that doesn't get too happy when these companies do things that make people unhappy. And
yeah,
I think if there's going to be a change to that, that's probably where it's going to start. And who knows whether that'll ever happen. But I mean, it goes back to the college football game I bought for the PS5. That I could not play until I got hooked to the internet, and I couldn't get hooked to the internet because PlayStation 5 doesn't work with the Spectrum routers. I had to go buy a whole nother router to be able to play a game. So it's like, I bought this game and then I had to buy a router, and then I had to, you know, it's just like, where does it end? Like, that's just insane. I just bought a game. I want to be able to pop it in there and play the game, and that's it. I'm not interested in playing online gaming generally.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there is kind of a downside to that, and that's, we think prices are bad now, but if you force game developers to sell you a final product that doesn't need further downloads and tweaking to fix, first off, just the capacity for the games is getting greater, especially on something like a Switch 2 that uses SD cards. Like, yeah, those are going to be expensive once you get to the point where you're having to use a 200 gigabyte SD card to put your games on in a mass production way. But also, that's going to require there to not be bugs in the game. Like, the amount that you're going to spend on testing is going to have to increase, and development times are going to be longer. I think part of why games haven't ballooned to stupid prices up to this point is because they kind of feel like they can keep making you pay. You know, you're going to drip feed money to them down the line. I think if we get back to how things were in the old days prior to always online systems, game prices are going to reflect that too.
Yeah. Which, you know what, if you're going to charge me $100 for a Switch 2 game, that game better be done.
Yeah.
I'm not testing your game if you're making me pay triple digits to pay for your game. That's the trade-off. If you're going to raise prices on games, I'll grumble about it. We'll complain about it on this podcast. If it's something I really want, I'm going to buy it anyway. But that had better be the game. That I don't want you coming back every 6 weeks and having to debug this game because I paid good money for it. So to me, that's the other side is... raise prices to match the market. Totally understand that. But now you have to give me a finished product or I'm going to have issues with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think not every game needs to be a live service. I think there have been so many of those that have failed in the past few years that have cost studios hundreds of millions of dollars. Maybe they don't all need to function that way. Maybe you just need to create a finished product that I buy and play. And you know, yeah, there may be some online element to it, but that isn't the game in its entirety.
Yeah, for sure. And some of the negatives we just talked about are not exclusive to the Switch 2. No. They are in every gaming system across the board. It's just, you know, Nintendo is kind of jumping on board with some of these things that the other companies are doing, which is totally, you know, expected.
In theory, that's what they should do.
Right.
You know, but that's what the market says you can do, you do it.
But like, if we're going to call Sony out for that, we're going to call Nintendo out for it, too, if they're going to jump on board. Is that it? Yeah, go ahead.
And I also think kind of going back into the game key card thing, I think a lot of that probably was necessary for them to get the buy-in for some of these third-party developers because they don't want to spend the money to have completed products on cartridges, which, again, could be pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So if that means, because, I mean, you look at some of those games, something like Hogwarts Legacy or, you know, Elden Ring. Those are huge games. Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. Like, if they can get away with just giving you something that gives you access to the download, they're going to go that route. And I can't blame them for wanting to do it. I don't like it, but I don't blame them for wanting to go that route. And from what I've read, like at the very least, these game key cards are required to be inserted in the system when you play the game. So in theory, you could still potentially let someone borrow that. You could still sell it to a used game store. Like there is still that side of it that's functional, even if the game itself isn't on the cartridge. What bothers me is when you have games that aren't that large, like something like a Bravely Default Remastered, which is supposedly like 11 gigabytes. There's no reason you can't give me the completed product physically on physical media that I own without online connection. That to me seems like a no-brainer.
And again, that's the issue I have with the whole thing. You're 100% right about those third party games that there's no way they could put them on a cartridge like that without having issues. But to me, it's a door opening to everything being that way and nothing being given to you on a physical cartridge. And I just think that's the wrong direction. I think getting that far away from physical media is still not preferred.
It's sad because it relies on the mindset of, oh, in 6 months, you won't want to play this game anymore anyway. So it doesn't matter if 10 years from now you can no longer access it. You've long since moved on and will have no interest in this game moving forward. And I think for someone who grew up in the 8 and 16 and 32-bit era, that's just depressing because after the show, I could run out and pop in Chrono Trigger and still love it to this day. I can't imagine a scenario when I couldn't put that Super Nintendo cartridge in my system and play it. Like there'll never be a time when I'll just have no interest in it anymore. And I think that's, unless you're talking about live services, I think that's what the industry wants. They want you to play it, be done with it and move on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's how you make your money. If things are disposable, then you can just have to go buy the next thing.
They're built to be replaced, not to last.
Yeah. Which is sad. Honestly, give me something I can play forever and I'm going to be really happy about that. And again, I'll have the trade-off of some things being service games, but I don't want that for every one of my games. So.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen, again, with like the Steam numbers that came out at the end of the year, a lot of people feel that way. They're happy with a certain game, and unless you can do something that's more fun, they're just going to keep playing Fortnite.
I mean, for some people, gaming is, I mean, it's about fun, but it's also a comfort thing. I'm going to, you know, work is stressful, life is stressful, the news is stressful. I'm going to pop in this game and I'm going to disconnect from the world for a few hours and just be in my happy place.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper than therapy. So, you know, just jump on that. And
absolutely,
you know, I think for a lot of us, especially as we get older, that's something that brings us a lot of comfort. But again, as we kind of wrap up, I'll get your final thoughts on the Switch 2 in a moment. I think overall, very positive. I think, you know, negative stuff aside, you know, I think there's a lot of really cool things coming with the Switch 2. Really excited to kind of see it implemented. Look forward to kind of being able to play one and kind of see what it looks like. But as I get your final thoughts, I think overall they looks like they are on the right track to what could be a really outstanding system.
Yeah, I agree. It's a shame that kind of the pricing uncertainty and discontent has really dominated the discourse after the direct, because I feel like with technology, people are so quick to equate price with hardware capability and performance.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm more of the, what am I getting out of this? Like when I buy a new video game, it's a set price. And then I start dividing that by how many hours of enjoyment I get from it. And am I coming out ahead? And I think I've played my Switch and my Switch OLED more than my PS5 probably. It's might be kind of close, but I've probably played the Switch more. So based on that alone, in theory, they could have charged me the same amount for my Switch that I paid for my PS5, and I'm coming out ahead still because I'm getting more hours of enjoyment out of it. I think if the Switch 2 comes out and maybe it's a little more expensive than you want to pay, but the games are there and you're using it regularly and getting a great time out of it, I think you're going to forget about the sticker shock.
Yeah, at least that's what Nintendo's hoping. That,
yeah.
You know, the initial price shock of what you see is not going to last, because everything is going to be so much fun once you actually get it in there. So hopeful for a summer release date. I think, you know, they haven't pushed that back yet, but obviously time will tell.
You never know.
Check local listings, as they say in the business. We'll see how that all shakes out, but hopefully the numbers we've been given and the date and everything that has kind of happened is going to kind of settle into that range. And if so, we'll probably both end up with one, and we'll be able to give you a firsthand knowledge of it coming up later this summer. Ready to wrap this up with the Empire Express.
Do it.
We are headed down the stretch of this podcast. Let's talk a little pro wrestling. Last night on SmackDown, Rey Fénix debuted and wrestled his first match as a member of the WWE roster, defeating one half of the NXT Tag Team Champions, Nathan Frazer. Thoughts on his debut match?
Match was good, which, given how good both these wrestlers are, I'm not surprised at all. I was more curious about what his presentation was going to be, given that Penta has kind of the more defined character, but they definitely went all out. The entrance was really cool. After the match, they gave him the mic and let him speak, very similar to what they did with Penta in his debut. Hoping these guys both have really legitimate singles runs before maybe eventually putting them together as Lucha Brothers, but yeah, I'm excited about it. Sad news on SmackDown last night, as Kevin Owens announced he has a neck injury, will need surgery, and will miss WrestleMania. You hate to hear that, right?
I do. Kevin Owens is probably one of my, if I had to pick like four or five of my favorite wrestlers in the industry, Owens is probably on that list. The dude is a guy who somehow thrived through the Vince McMahon era by just having common sense in everything he did, and has carried that into the new era. He's somebody who certainly puts his body on the line and loves the business. And I just hate it for him. He's been involved in these hot storylines over the last 6 months, and to have this be how he kind of gets cheated out of his WrestleMania match really sucks. But hopefully the surgery is minimal. Obviously we're talking neck surgeries. Nothing is minor, but hopefully whatever it is something he'll be able to recover from. We'll see him somewhere down the road, whether it's later this year or early 2026. CM Punk announced his favor that Paul Heyman owes him last night, as he said the favor was for Heyman to be in Punk's corner against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. Is that a good choice for the favor?
I mean, ideally you'd want a bigger favor, obviously, but you also have to consider that the favor has to be something within Paul Heyman's authority to deliver. So, you know, he couldn't ask to be thrown into a title match necessarily. Punk had a great story from their past to sell the favor. So I like that they tied it into something for so long ago. And I think it just amps up the drama even more for this match. So yeah, I'm all about it. Jeff Tate announced that he will begin playing songs from his new album Operation Mindcrime 3 soon. He is currently touring, playing the original Mindcrime in its entirety for the last time. Wonder how soon we'll get an album release date.
Yeah, the article that was that I linked to this, basically, he didn't really say when the album's coming out, that it's going to be sometime and that he doesn't control that. I would expect we'll see a springtime release of Mindcrime 3 if he's starting to sing songs from it. My guess is we're in the back end of production on that. But if you haven't seen Mindcrime in its entirety, you want to and you want to hear Jeff Tate sing it, this is the last tour he's going to sing it on. So jump on the on board and get a chance to see that. Finally, if you're looking to stream the dub of Toradora in the U.S., you may be out of luck. It has been removed from Crunchyroll. Evidently, the Blu-rays are also out of print, and the only place to watch it subbed is on Amazon Prime. Sounds like more people are headed to the high seas, right?
Yeah, you know, I saw this reported the other day. Thankfully, I bought the Blu-rays a couple years ago. You know, Crunchyroll can't possibly retain all the licenses they have as more players enter the anime streaming space, which to me just makes it all the more important that they really nail all the facets of their product that they have full control over. Things like the dubs that they produce in-house, the subtitles and captions they offer, the user experience with the application, and just kind of in general, ensuring they're providing customers with a better overall experience than their competitors, both the legal ones like your Amazon Primes and the ones, you know, maybe... not so on the up and up. I think you control what you can control and just deal with these kind of unfortunate developments.
Yeah. And to be clear, because we love to crap on Crunchyroll when we get the opportunity, this was, as far as we have heard, an NIS America decision, not a Crunchyroll decision.
Yeah, I mean, you can't keep all your licenses all the time. Like, you don't have control over that.
Yeah. So they've decided to put them in limbo. So if you want to write your angry fan letters, NIS America would be the place to send those. And that is going to wrap things up for this edition of the Nerdcast News Report. You are all caught up on your nerdy news for the week. Just a reminder, schedule, we're going to be on this Saturday schedule for a little while. One of three podcasts we'll do every week. We'll be back again tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern time. In the evening, we'll be talking all things hard rock and heavy metal with the Hard Rock Empire. The music of March the 21st, I believe, is where we are this week. So check that out again, 7 o'clock Eastern. Then we'll be back Monday morning to get you started with all the nerdy news you need for the week with the Nerdcast News Report at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time on Mondays. Make sure you check that out on Twitch and on YouTube or on the VOD, whichever you prefer. Big thanks to Stoveleg Media for their continued support of the podcast. Big thanks to Mike, as always. And a big thanks to you for listening whenever and wherever you are listening. We will talk to you again tomorrow night for another episode of Hard Rock Empire. But until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.